This is AENN, American Exceptionalism News Network.
Everybody is to leave here immediately. This cafe is closed until further notice. Clear the room at once.
How can you close me up on what ground?
I'm shocked to find that gambling is going on in here.
You're winning, sir.
Oh, thank you very much. Everybody out at once.
Round up the usual suspects.
2-1-1-0.
I know some people want me to bypass Congress and change the laws on my own.
It is the agenda for the 21st century you're living in today. For a brave new world where everything that you cherished and held true will no longer exist.
The original Constitution, I think it is an imperfect document, and I think it is a document that reflects some deep flaws.
And that would authorize him to use the military to arrest people in the United States who, in the president's opinion, are enemies of the country.
You'll find that they've also asked for the right to imprison farmers who wouldn't keep books as prescribed by the federal government. The Secretary of Agriculture asked for the right to seize farms through condemnation and resell them to other individuals. And contained in that same program was a provision that would have allowed the federal government to remove 2 million farmers from the soil.
New government Republicans and Democrats were busy shredding the last vestiges of the Constitution. They're talking about inserting the army into domestic law enforcement. The homeland is part of the battlefield, and people can be held without trial, whether an American citizen or not.
I have been often to, the mothership in New York City, but it's good to have an outpost of the council right here down the street from the State Department. We get a lot of advice from the council, so this will mean I won't have as far to go to be told what we should be doing and how we should think about the future.
Take off the tinfoil hat and put on the Kevlar. It's time for battle with Paul Preston and the Agenda 21 Show.
Live from the Pentagon on 9/11. September 11, 2001, a day that will live in infamy. There's no question about that. And, of course, we're 17 years removed from it. And we are having a discussion. We had Scott Adams on from the Scott Adams Show in the last hour talking about remembrance and where we're at today vis-a-vis the attacks of 2001. And where we're going in the future. And with us right now is my very, very good friend, Bill Steiner from Pennsylvania. And, Bill, I just wanted to get the music here all taken care of, but I wanted to get you on the air today because this is a very special day for you because your activities involved with, interesting circumstances around Flight 93 and especially the after effect of that and the aftermath. Bill, welcome back to Agenda 21 Radio.
Thank you so very much, once again, Paul, for having me. I'm pleased to be here, and this is a very special moment because I'm sitting in my kitchen here right now, and I'm looking out the back door to the east, and I was standing in front of that door when Flight 93 came by a mile or so with a great roar. Some of my friends were playing golf at a golf course, and they saw the passengers' faces. It was flying so low and apparently under full power to get up over the first mountain coming in from the west here. It went up over that and the second mountain, and then it went down in Shanksville.
Well, that must have been a very, very riveting moment to experience that and to see the aircraft itself and then imagine the big plume of smoke that billowed up.
Yes, Paul, and I have to say that every hair was up over my body as I spoke to you about that. I've relived it, and it's just something that you'll never forget. And what happened afterwards is even more tragic. And when I started to write a brief description for wider circulation today, and I called it "With the construction of the minaret, they've just built the Tower of Voices. It's almost completed, but they have the structure up. And the Flight 93 Memorial Mosque is completed, and I'm sure that's what you want to talk about mm-hmm. today.
Mm-hmm.
And I wrote, "Never forget has come to have dual meaning in this instance. Never forget the heinous act of terror, and never forget the fraud of building an Islamic mosque as a memorial to it." So that summarizes it.
Well, you know, it's very interesting. I didn't get a hold of this story until years later when things started to really develop, and you and I talked in 2000s, gosh, a long time, early 2007 or 8, I think that was the first time, and you were deeply engaged in the struggle to prevent the building of the current memorial, which is really a mosque. Tell us how you became aware of what was going on. I know you're very active in civic. Well, let's talk about, first of all, how we met, because this was quite a little tour into discovery about how the mainstream media and everybody else was suppressing a story. It took us quite a while to actually meet up and a lot of research, and just by happenstance, we did meet because I was trying to get news and information about this because I'd heard about this mosque situation. I was very, very curious about what was going on there. And so I started calling around to try and get a hold of anybody who would talk. I tried to talk to news agencies in Pittsburgh, and no one wanted to talk to me about it, which I thought was very, very odd. And so finally, I pulled up one of your local newspapers there on the internet and happened to find your name in an article. And I did a search, 411 search, and I got you on the line. And boy, it was...
Shocked me as much as I shocked you. I actually started collaborating with a guy by the name of Alec Rawls out in Palo Alto, California, who was blogging about all this stuff on his errortheoryblogspot.com. And
mm-hmm.
Let me just tell you how I came upon this. It was July 31st. It was a warm, very warm Sunday in 2005, and we were about 35 miles or so west of the crash site. My wife and I decided to go up. We knew that the five finalists for the design competition were on display in a vacant building up there at the Georgian Place of Shops, which is a shopping center. And we went up. We were curious. We took a ride up over the mountain and went in and... We have a connection to it coming by, and we want to see what's going on. It's so close to us. It has such an impact. So we walked in, and the second design on the left was called Crescent of Embrace.
Right.
And it featured a half-mile-wide Islamic-looking crescent. And I said to my wife, I said, "Look, we had been to the Middle East in 2000, so I was a little more familiar with some of that stuff than most people are. And I said, "Look, this looks like it's an Islamic crescent." And she said, "Yeah, it does." And she said, "That's the best design on the in the whole place." I said, "They're going to pick that." And I saw that it looked like maybe an intern or one of the younger National Park Service people there. I thought, maybe I'm just having a little delusion here. Maybe I better do some checking. You know, my wife and I saw it. So I said to this young gal, I said, "Look at this over here. Does that look Islamic to you? What's going on?" And she said, "Yeah, it does." So I knew then that we weren't completely, our cheese were still somewhat on a cracker. And I wrote the only one of a negative comment. I said, "This is not acceptable. It has Islamic content." Well, I actually came home and I published a one-page expose to this, and I sent it to everyone I possibly could, including Congressman Jack Murtha, by the way,
mm-hmm.
who my wife and I both went to the same grade school. He's from our town here. And we know Jack, and not real well. He's a little bit on the other side of the ledger from us politically.
You think? And,
he never replied to any of this stuff. And I sent all of it out and so forth. Well, anyhow, I eventually called Alec Ross, who's a very, very brilliant guy, and he gets complete credit for the exposing of the details in this. And I convinced him I was a worthy collaborator, and he said, well, you can be my Eastern wingman because of the distance and so forth. So he put me up to going up to one of their quarterly meetings, and I passed out a bunch of documents with great trepidation. I'll tell you, I'm not a bright guy that way. And I was really, really something, and I was interviewed, and then the whole thing broke loose. Pam Geller picked it up. Michelle Malkin picked it up, and so did other people. And of course, you've been a great expose of helping us to expose this. And I can tell you this without any doubt whatsoever, that this thing has the elements of an Islamic mosque, and it points to Mecca and has a whole bunch of other characteristics. Go ahead. Maybe you have some questions.
Well, I was going to say that the listeners right now can go to agenda21radio.news and see the articles. That every year when this happens, I pull this article up, and it's got a lot of content from Eric Rawls and yourself and interviews that you and I have done over the years that are on there people can listen to. Because, and it's got all the drawings, all the, modeling and so on that was done from the beginning. But just about everything that's an element in this design is Islamic, including pointing directly to Mecca. And of course, being seen, you can see this thing in the fall, which is a season right now. The leaves are starting to turn red. Do they still have those red maples around it?
Well, believe it or not, the red maples have been replaced by red oaks.
There you go.
I haven't been up there for a while, but I will go up and maybe take some pictures, and I'll send them to you. But they made a lot of design changes as a result of our efforts, and they muted some of the things on the website. They've hidden the design plans. You have to do it by request only. And they actually put a beard and a pair of sunglasses on the design, so it wasn't so starkly looking as an Islamic crescent. But I'm looking at your website here right now, Agenda 21 Radio News, and I can tell you that the thing you have up there, the crescent and star, is what we saw. Mm-hmm. And I didn't realize it was so dramatic. That what you see there with the more plain crescent star was done by a guy who morphed this thing. But Alec Roy, if you look at the details, and the devil is in the details, it's very complex and is not easily understood on the first blush. In fact, when Alec told me what he had actually found, I thought he was taking me into a delusion. Well, is that delusion? There is a thing called the folie à deux. My background's in psychological testing. I did that for 30 years, 21 and a half of it in a state prison here locally. So I'm not the first blush to understand some of the psychopathologies involved, even my own. And I thought, well, my God, he's taking me into some delusion that he has, and all the detail finally works out. And it's really, I had to look at myself and take my pulse about that 10 or 12 times to be certain that he had this correct. And that's how complex it is and how difficult it is to understand. As I say, you got to look into it, but once you look at it and hear what Tom Burnett said, Tom Burnett is the father of Tom Burnett Jr., who was killed on Flight 9, murdered on Flight 93, has come in full support of us. And he was on the selection committee, that what they called the stage two jury for these designs, and he claims that there was fraud in the voting process. He bitterly complained that this bastardizes what he and his son and the others did, Todd Beamer, and then he said that he'll have none of it, and he alleged fraud in the voting process, and then said that all his complaints are missing from the National Park Archives. So it's quite a conspiracy when you get right down to it.
Well, he and his wife were appeared twice on Agenda 21 Radio, thanks to you. We had them on, and he was basically reflecting the same thing. And as we take them, I'm looking at the article. I didn't get a chance to read it today, but because I just posted it up this morning. But it's very, very telling, the design. And, of course, the star portion of the Red Crescent is the actual crash site of Flight 93. Isn't that correct?
That is correct. And there are if you take the two crescent tips mm-hmm. from the architect's drawing, pixel by pixel, and that's what Alec Rawls did. He's a great researcher. And you connect the ends of the crescent tips and then bisect the crescent, that is, make it like an X, you know, crosswise. The line from the crash site through the center of the Great Crescent, which is a half mile wide, goes right to Mecca within a degree or two.
Right.
And they made it slightly, Alec goes into some greater detail about how the precision of this, and it's quite interesting. I'll save that because it just wouldn't go over the radio very well. But believe me, it points to Mecca. And there are a whole bunch of other Mecca orientations in the design which confirm that this is not accidental in some way.
Mm-hmm.
And Alec, the Tower of Voice is most interesting, which was just constructed. I'm looking at an article here by Renata Signorini in the local Tribune Review, Flight 93 Dedication Remembrance. Events planned. They dedicated the Tower of Voices, which is a 93-foot tower, which will have a bunch of chimes in it. And Alec, and there are a bunch of unusually shaped trees planted around it. Now, I haven't been up there lately, so I don't know if those trees are in place or whether they're going to be in place, but they were a part of the original architect's drawing. And Alec brilliantly did a genome, which is a time lapse sort of thing for each month of the year, and the shadow from this 93-foot into the trees, because they're very oddly shaped. If you look at a sundial, the shape of where the extension of the shadow rests to tell time is oddly shaped, and those trees around it make the shadow of this Tower of Voices an Islamic sundial for marking the 5 o'clock hour of prayer, the very important 5 o'clock hour of prayer, each day of the year, based on the shadow cast by this thing. And that was one of the more esoteric ones. So, and it's sitting right up there beside Route 30, and, of course, the gongs will be chiming in the wind all the time to call the faithful to prayer, if you will. And that's not too far of a stretch.
Yeah, really. That's not a mistake.
No, it's not a mistake.
It's not a mistake.
And then there are orientations in front of those trees, which go to Mecca. If you draw a line right in front of the trees that are or the trees that were to be planted there, and again, I don't know that they're there right now, it points to Mecca with the same degree of accuracy as does the crescent pointing bisection. So it's without any doubt. And Alec has detailed this, and I'm sure your listeners are saying, well, this guy's nuts, but there are a lot of us who are nuts who have looked at this. And we're hoping that we can be confirmed to be nuts again after a good congressional investigation, which we've called for repeatedly, and Tom Burnett and Beverly Burnett have called for, which has never, ever been done. And,
now, the thing you mentioned about the election, because there was a selection process, and isn't the architect, wasn't he a Muslim, or wasn't his wife a Muslim?
Well, we don't know exactly what her religious or ethnic consideration is, but she looks and sounds Middle Eastern, and I don't want to get into trouble with any kind of casting of dispersions there. My wife and I went up to the first to the fourth anniversary, many of the dignitaries were there. We were just mingling around with them, and Paul Murdoch and his wife Melina were there, and Paul introduces the design, and Melina gets up to speak, and she speaks with a very broken Middle Eastern sounding accent. Alec tells me that she may be Turkish. I'm not sure about that, so please, this is not an allegation, and I don't want to get into trouble with that. But she looked and sounded, and I said to my, when she started speaking, just let me say before this, I was actually starting to move away from this because I thought, you know, it's got to be some kind of an accident, and this is all just too much. And she started speaking, and this is she's the co-architect of this thing. And I said to my, oh, my goodness, we've got to go back into this. And I recontacted some folks, and we became more heavily engaged after that.
Well, the awareness, the local community, they've got to realize what this is.
Oh, there's no question. If you talk to anybody in the local, in a bar or grocery store, they'll say, oh, yeah. And then they have other things to say that we don't talk about. Yeah.
Yeah, I bet. So this is a basically, it's a federal operation by the Park Service.
Yep.
And, you know, I did a massive amount of research, as you know, in trying to call these people out, and just got the complete runaround. And every time when I was a media, of course, they shut me off after a while. But they were very, very concerned about our reporting, to much where I was even getting contacted from. You really don't want to report this kind of stuff. Well, we did anyway.
Yeah.
You know, we're getting encouraged at that point when you have somebody from the Park Service call you and basically lay out the law for you. And I said, well, let me talk about the First Amendment. How's that law working for you? And so it seemed to put them back in a corner. But you've also, I think, experienced a fair amount of intimidation in this process, as well as a lot of other people I know, because, you know, people have told me a lot of things about this whole circumstance and about the voting and everything. But the voting was a fix, and I think at one point in time you were describing to me the meetings that were going on prior to the voting, and I defined them as Delphi meetings, which is something that is commonly used.
It looked like, Paul, if your reader, if your listeners are not familiar with the Delphi, D-E-L-P-H-I, I believe, technique, it is an illegitimate, it came out of the RAND Corporation, I think, and it's a way of achieving consensus in groups by going into breakout sessions and then having moderators at each table, and then the moderator takes the consensus up to the head man at the head table, and then he just makes a decision about what the consensus was based on what he's got in front of him or what he's not got in front of him. So the Delphi technique, the Oracle of Delphi, I presume, technique is one of those things that you'll find in public meetings, municipal meetings, school board meetings, when they're trying to get people all together to support something. If you ever get into a breakout situation where you're in an important meeting and you're trying to achieve consensus or some sort of agreement, that's what's happening. Don't fall for it.
Well, you know, it's interesting. I was taught the Delphi technique. I've used it many, many times. But I use it to where the consensus is the consensus, you know, the groups, which leads to positive. I think it leads to positive outcomes. But I can sure that's why I was talking to you guys about they're using the Delphi technique on you the wrong way, which is what we see in Agenda 21 issues all the time out here in California. I think we're throughout the rest of the nation. There is a good and a bad way to use Delphi, and I always used it for the good because I was with the Western Association of Schools and Colleges accreditation process. That's a process where you want to reach a consensus with everybody to move your curriculum and school forward. And when you work it right, it's very, very positive. But it clearly, in this case, it's exactly as you described. The moderator said, oh, yeah, well, this is what the way it's going to be. They want that one right there.
Oh, yeah. And I have a township locally, which I have to be involved with. And I saw the Agenda 21 people come in there and use the same techniques. So it's ubiquitous. It's a matter of honesty and integrity, and just being true to truth. And we must all seek truth, or we end up somewhere else. And so many people don't even know how to seek truth. And the way we do it is by making sure and double checking, and making sure that we trust people like our trust between us, and my trust between Alec and Tom and Beverly Burnett and all those other people. They've never let me down. And they have no agenda to lie to me, and I know the difference. And it takes a while. You know, I'm getting on in years here, so I have the wisdom of being able to put the next thing that happens to me into a previously understood category, and that's my definition of wisdom.
So
hard to fool me after working 21 years in a state prison testing inmates. 90% of them were diagnosed as sociopathic. So I know the most sociopath when
you got to work with some of those Obama files.
Well, don't get me started.
Yeah, and we're going to cut for a break right now. We're talking to Bill Steiner about the, well, the mosque at Flight 93. That's what the memorial really truly is. And we'll be back in about 2 minutes. Stay with us. You're listening to Agenda 21 Radio.
Tired of paying outrageous prices for Viagra? Well, we have great news for you. Now you can finally get Viagra at huge discounts. Healthy Man allows you to save up to $500 on Viagra. Why pay U.S. pharmacy prices of $15 per pill or more when you can get Viagra for less than $3 a pill? Call today and get 40 Viagra pills for only $99. This can cost as much as $600 at your local pharmacy. You can't afford not to call us. If you want Viagra at the lowest prices, never pay $15 a pill pharmacy prices again. Get Viagra for less than $3 a bill. Call 1-800-558-7297 today and save up to $500 and get 40 pills for just $99. Healthy Man is fast, easy, and affordable. Operators are waiting at 1-800-558-7297 to take your call right now. Call 1-800-558-7297. That's 1-800-558-7297. Again, 1-800-558-7297.
If you're 85 or younger, would you like peace of mind and comfort for your family? We're Final Expense Direct with an urgent message for you. The average funeral today costs over $8,000, but the most you'll get from government benefits is $255. How will your family pay the difference? We can help. Our senior plans start as low as just a dollar a day and pay up to $30,000 for a funeral and other final expenses. Peace of mind is easy. There's no medical exam. You'll have lifetime coverage, and your plan can't be canceled as long as you pay your premiums. Call now for free information about our senior plans. Answer a few simple questions and receive approval right on the phone. Plus, call right now, and we'll give you a discount prescription card for free. Call 800-826-1132. That's 800-826-1132. Again, 800-826-1132.
Hello, I'm Mike Lindell, inventor of MyPillow. My employees and I would like to thank you for making MyPillow possible. Years ago, when I invented MyPillow, I thought I was the only one out there with problems sleeping. Pillows would go flat, I'd flip-flop all night, or wake up with a sore neck or headache. So that's why I invented MyPillow. You can adjust MyPillow's patented fill to your exact individual needs to help you get to sleep faster and stay there longer to get the quality sleep you need. I back it with my 10-year warranty and my 60-day money-back guarantee. And now to thank you, I'm bringing back my best offer ever. Buy one of my MyPillows and get another one absolutely free.
Call 800-266-4715. That's 800-266-4715 and use the promo code AGENDA. 800-266-4715, promo code AGENDA.
Take off the tinfoil hat and put on the Kevlar. It's time for battle. With Paul Gresson and the Agenda 21 Show.
And welcome back to Agenda 21 Radio. We're with Bill Steiner outside of Shanksville, Pennsylvania, is where he lives. And we're talking about the mosque at Flight 93. You know, a lot of people don't understand that this memorial site is actually a mosque. In fact, it's probably the largest mosque in the world. And we've been talking about how it was designed and who designed it and how it got there. And I guess we can get into more details about how it got there because, of course, everybody inside the government had to be involved in this. And I remember, Bill, at one point in time when you were talking about the deep state, really, I think we didn't call it then the deep state, but it truly has turned out to be the deep state, is that you were saying that you were basically brought to your understanding about how the deep state was so deep based upon your experiences with the mosque being built in the Park Service and Department of Interior.
I think that's correct, Paul. You know, we didn't understand, we couldn't understand how people in the media and in the government agencies that we were dealing with couldn't see that there were major flaws in this. They did a little bit because they made the adjustments. So there were admissions that there were things about it that were not correct. But it was really to disguise it and to put a beard on the thing, if you will. And we look back now and think that there had to be some very large, perhaps financial support from. We know that a lot of donations came in from England and overseas. I'm not sure about the details of that, but our efforts locally really did slow down their fundraising, and that really upset them. So we were getting a lot of vituperation from various people, and I'll just leave them unnamed. And you know that it's true, and I've talked with you about it privately. So we got a lot of pressure not to contain. And from the family members, we would set up a display at one of their meetings up there, and the family members, I can remember, it tore my heart out, walking up the stairs screaming at us, saying, "You're desecrating and all this stuff." And we knew that the thing had already been desecrated a couple of different ways. And we couldn't understand why, couldn't get any traction, why the politicians were not inquisitive about it. And we had appealed to them repeatedly. We sent them discs with a complete details of this, because, you know, it does take some visuals to fully understand it, and also the narrative that we've written extensively about that are on the websites. And we look back now and say that was all in operation. The media were interested and were actively avoiding us, and the politicians weren't, especially Jack Murtha, who was a great disappointment eventually, as you know, to anybody who didn't see the corruption that he had been involved with, including ABSCAM. And I'll raise that specter. ABSCAM was a cooperative effort that he was an unindicted conspirator with. ABSCAM was an Arab scam, and they were setting up different people who were looking to influence Murtha and other politicians, and he was an unindicted co-conspirator. Jack Murtha, one of our congressmen, one of our most powerful congressmen, ended up to be an unindicted co-conspirator with the ABSCAM thing. So whether or not there was foreign or Arab or Islamic money involved in this, we can only speculate. But it's an expensive memorial. It's, I think, 2,100 acres, and they just spent $6 million putting this tower up. I don't know if that helps. I can't be more specific, I guess. But, you know, it's all in the fabric of this that nobody really picked it up in any major way other than folks like ourselves.
Well, you know, it's really interesting. I can remember there was that fundraising. We were talking back and forth because it seems to have been stifled, the fundraising, and all of a sudden, boom, big chunks of money started to come in. And we were reporting that, actually, at the time when the fundraising was going on, that there wasn't any fundraising because people were your program. And I think are the you know, guys like myself talking about it and Alec Rawls talking about it was actually slowing it down. But then all of a sudden, big money came in.
Yes, and I don't know all the details in that, but that apparently happened because I happen to know a fairly high-level corporate executive down in the Pittsburgh area, lives right down in that area, and he and a mutual friend got to the sports teams and the corporate people and I think dropped the whole situation on them. And I think that was an effective way to shut it up, because at that point they really, really put the pressure on us. And then things sort of shifted around and the money flowed, and we don't really know where it came from. I think a good congressional investigation should be done to expose this. It's hard to do this on a day like this, though. I put out a little piece to some of my friends I was going to publish, and the consensus was not to do it at this time because of the president being up there and the sensitivities. But I've never gone to the site and done any kind of demonstration out of complete, utter respect for the people and what they did up there. Without any doubt, I have great respect. And the old memorial that they had, which was simply a fence where people would leave trinkets from their car, or just anything they had with them, and flowers and so forth, was extremely powerful. Now we have this barren thing, and if you recall some Alex notations, who's much more expert this on the structure of mosques than I am, he said that the interior mosques never have any kind of iconography like the Christian churches do. They forbid that. It's all architectural. And this thing is a half mile wide, and it is very barren inside. And so that's another component. And of course, that we have the wall of where the names are, and there was in the original design, there were the 40 glass blocks for the people on the plane who died that were not the terrorists. And then there were an additional four blocks surreptitiously included in significant places. It's on the website. And that were not named, but they were the same kind of blocks. So we knew that the naming blocks were for the names, but there were four other blocks, 44 total people on the plane, and the act that established the Flight 93 memorial specifically forbids any memorialization of the terrorists, and here we have a terrorist memorializing
mom. Right, and you know, the thing is that the people don't necessarily understand that sundial effect, which is what that tower represents. It's just amazing.
Yeah, that's pretty crazy. Yeah. And this finishes it. This completes the mosque, because every mosque has a minaret from which the imam calls the faithful to prayer using the shahada, which is that melodious Arabic chant that they produce. And we see this as a symbolic chanting, if you will. Mm-hmm. I mean, it's a little bit of a stretch, but that's what Alex says. There's a lot of symbolism. And in mosques, you have symbolism instead of icons, which are pictures of people. That's why the Muslims get so upset when people draw pictures of the Prophet, because that's heresy to them. They don't believe that that's appropriate. Again, I'm not an expert in that, but that's one of the factors involved. And also, we must note that Islam always builds mosques, most often builds mosques, to commemorate battle sites and secure them. In fact, they've done that all over the world. They were trying to do it at Ground Zero in New York, and I think Donald Trump actually had a hand in nixing that. But they were out here in the field in Pennsylvania. We're kind of perhaps a little more backward and not as sophisticated about these
easy
things,
easy enough to persuade, you know, a population out there, because it's rural, you know.
Right. I mean, you know, we're not. I'm fairly well educated. I didn't know any of this stuff that Alec had discovered about the specifics. As I said, I was incredulous when he found all this stuff, and it's obviously true, because later, you know, I've done further study on it, and it's certainly very characteristic of a mosque, and it has all the elements, Paul.
You know, one of the things I'm looking at the article, it says about the tower, and this was written several years ago, of course, by Alec in his statement. It says there is a 93-foot high tower, also crescent shaped, from which a suspended 40 large tubes, which act as wind chimes, emanating low, never-ending moans. 40 is the number of passengers on and crew on board, and are buried here. I surmise these 40 souls must never know peace and quiet, perhaps because they are infidels languishing in hell.
Yes, that is a stretch. Put the hair up all over me again, but I do understand what Alec is saying, and if you look at it as a symbolic thing, there are 40 chimes swinging in the wind, forever gonging, without peace, and then there are four little bells way up in the top. I don't know if they're still there in the final design. That was the original design, and those are the guys way up in the top that were the terrorists. There's 44 chimes in there, are 44 structures that look like chimes, let me put it that way. Again, I'm trying to be as honest and cautious as possible here, but Alec suddenly came out, and he said that they would forever be gonging without peace, and that would be an Islamic hell then.
Yeah. It says
makes your eyes swell up a little bit, doesn't it?
Yeah, it does. And he goes on to say that there have been some modifications, to be sure, most notably another shorter semicircle of trees adjacent to and facing the sun, the open end of the crescent, but not closing it into a circle. And there has been some change to the crescent of embrace to the circle of embrace. Is it still known as the circle of embrace?
Yeah, I think circle of embrace is defined. It went it went to bowl of embrace and then to circle of embrace. Bowl of embrace was just a little bit too much, I thought. But yeah, they changed it a couple of times. And this was in response to our expose. There's no question.
Mm-hmm. It says this design was selected out of 1,000 entries nominated for this project and was created by Paul and Melena Murdoch, architects from Los Angeles. And Paul Murdoch was quoted as saying, as a crescent of embrace, it is to be a gesture of healing and bonding. And one of the benefactors who funded the design competition was Heinz Foundations, Teresa Heinz, who married John Kerry.
Yes, the Heinz Corporation, and I think many others have been involved in this. And I haven't followed it. I just went on to other things. And as I mentioned to you when you called this morning, my wife had been ill for after heart surgery, and she had some severe complications. And it took me. She was in a hospital for almost a third of a year. In fact, almost a third of a year. So it took us completely off everything that we were doing, trying to save her life. And she's doing okay right now. So those things intervene, and that's why I didn't follow a lot of this. So I'm not quite up on it as I should be, perhaps. But I do see where you're talking about the Teresa Heinz and married to John Kerry and how they have funded this. And there were a number of other very liberal organizations, I think, involved in funding this because of Murdoch's contacts. He's a California guy.
Mm-hmm. Hollywood and San Francisco, I'm sure there's a lot of organizations that were more than happy once the Heinz spoke up and other people started to climb on board. They realized this is the thing to do, which is, it's very odd, of course, that John Kerry, our former Secretary of State, whose name is in the news again, is a possible candidate for president, which is not going to happen. He can say he wants to run and all that stuff. But, you take a look at John Kerry and as Secretary of State, the things that he was involved in. There's even now this story about his Teresa Heinz son, who is John Kerry's stepson, was involved with lobbying on behalf of the Ukrainian government while John Kerry was Secretary of State and got some $1 billion out of the Ukrainians, and he also got $1 billion out of the Chinese for his lobbying efforts while John Kerry was Secretary of State. I mean, this is stuff you just you can't make it up. It's just another connected dot, though.
When you look at everything that's going on, it's easy to understand how this level of corruption is going on all over through our government. Everything it seems like our country is right now upside down. And certainly this deep state thing, embedded bureaucrats and people with a lot of money connections, just like you're speaking, had to have an influence in this to have it go through without any real evaluation. John Murtha was in a position to start the investigation, and his connections to Abscam and so forth just make this just very suspicious.
Mm-hmm. So. Well, he was a very suspicious guy anyway, built kind of airports out in the middle of nowhere and things like that. Isn't that true that there's an airport that he built out there?
Yes, I lived in Johnstown for 7 years and worked up there. And there's a very large airport which is suitable for, it should be a commuter airport for twin-engine prop jets. And that's probably where President Trump landed, because I see he's on Shanksville right now on the TV. And so it's capable of landing large jet aircraft. So I suspect that's where he came in. And so John had that built. And of course, there's a lot of very strong Democrat area up in the Johnstown area. And he came in there with a great deal of federal funds and endeared himself to the people, which I guess politicians are supposed to do. But that's a big boondoggle up there, because I think it will.
Oh, well, guess what? I think we just lost.
In flags.
We just lost Bill Steiner. We'll see if we can connect here. We'll listen to the president in the meantime.
But in its place has grown a new resolve to live our lives with the same grace and courage as the heroes of Flight 93. This field is now a monument to American defiance. This memorial is now a message to the world. America will never, ever submit to tyranny. Since September 11th, nearly 5.5 million young Americans have enlisted in the United States Armed Forces. Nearly 7,000 service members have died facing down the menace of radical Islamic terrorism. Today, we also think of the more than 200,000 service members now serving overseas. And we think of every citizen who protects our nation at home, including our state, local, and federal law enforcement. These are great Americans. These are great heroes. We honor and thank them all. As Commander-in-Chief, I will always do everything in my power to prevent terrorists from striking American soil. Here with us today is Dorothy Garcia Blockler. Her husband, Sonny, was one of the passengers on Flight 93. On September 11th, 2001, just over a month after their 32nd wedding anniversary, Sonny was on his way back from a business meeting. He called Dorothy, who he loved so much, called her on the plane, and uttered her name before the line went dead silent. In the days after the attack, Dorothy told the investigators there was only one thing she wanted from this field: her husband's wedding ring. They would know it by the inscription etched inside. "All my love," it said, followed by the number 8269, the date of their anniversary. The officers, great people, promised to try, but in this field of records, it seemed certainly impossible. Dorothy began to pray, and she asked her friends to do the same. Days went by, then months. Still no ring. A week before Christmas, on December 19th, she heard a knock at the door. Two officers were standing with a really beautiful, to her, she saw it was so beautiful, she knew what was happening, a beautiful, small, white box. Inside it was a wallet, a luggage tag, a driver's license, a small bag with the wedding ring inscribed with those three precious words, "All my love." Those words echo across this field. And those words tell the story of 40 men and women who gave all their love for their families, their country, and our freedom. To Dorothy and to every family here today, America will never forget what your loved ones did for all of us. Earlier this week, you dedicated the final part of this memorial, the Tower of Voices. Standing at 93 feet tall, the Tower of Voices is now the first structure visitors see when they come to this now sacred ground. It will hold 40 beautiful chimes that ring throughout these fields, each a unique note, but all in perfect harmony. Each time we hear those chimes playing in the wind, we will remember the 40. We will remember their faces, their voices, their stories, their courage, and their love. And we will remember that free people are never at the mercy of evil, because our destiny is always in our hands. America's future is not written by our enemies. America's future is written by our heroes. As long as this monument stands, as long as this memorial endures, brave patriots will rise up in America's hours of need, and they too will fight back. Seventeen years ago, 40 incredible men and women showed the whole world that no force on earth will ever conquer the American spirit. We treasure their memory, we cherish their legacy, and we ask God to forever bless the immortal heroes of Flight 93. Thank you. God bless you. God bless the families, and God bless the United States of America. Thank you very much. Thank you. Thank you very much. Thank you.
Thank you. Well, that was Donald Trump, of course, President Trump, addressing everybody at the Shanksville, Pennsylvania Memorial. Of course, Bill Steiner was just with us for most of the hour here, and we understand now what is behind the whole memorial that is there. And hopefully someday the injustice of that memorial will actually be corrected. I have a feeling that President Trump will be part of that correction that will go on. Anyway, a travesty, but we cannot forget the heroes today. And we should not forget the heroes. Todd Beamer and Barnett and everybody else that were on that aircraft that day who brought down the aircraft. Anyway, we are going to continue on here with our 9/11 program in the next hour. We got a lot of stuff to talk about here, and of course we're going to be talking about California and all the stuff that's happening out here. It's all connected, ladies and gentlemen. It's all connected. We've connected the dots, so to speak. Anyway, so stay with us. Remember to visit our website, agenda21radio.news. That's agenda21radio.news. And our sponsors, MyPillow, and MyPillow, the promo code is AGENDA. You're going to be staying with us as a sponsor, thank goodness, for all of your calls and everything and protestations, anyway. And also, newcaliforniastate.com, newcaliforniastate.com. Remember to visit our website there, newcaliforniastate.com, for all the information about New California. We've got a ton of things happening. Today is a grievance day, so grievance number 34 is going to be read out there, grievance number 34. And that's, you know, it's a lot of grievances, but, you know, we have a lot more to go. We have a lot more grievances to go. So, anyway, stay with us. And remember, stay strong, America. Stay strong. We are exceptional Americans.
us to the last vestiges of freedom, democracy, and the American way of life. Paul Preston with Agenda 21.
You're listening to Paul Preston's Agenda 21 Radio. Stay tuned for more of Paul Preston's Agenda 21 Radio.
This is AENN, American Exceptionalism News Network.